Hello and welcome to Principal News Analysis. I'm Kaba Tafwai. Let there be no doubt, America is determined to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon, and I will take no options off the table to achieve that goal. Those were the statements from U.S. President Barack Obama's State of the Union address, as if Iran was on the path of acquiring a nuclear weapon. This is why Iran has repeatedly said it is not seeking nuclear weapons, and that's what we're going to discuss in this news analysis.
Let there be no doubt. America is determined to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon, and I will take no options off the table to achieve that goal.
Addressing American lawmakers in his last State of the Union address of his first term at the White House, U.S. President Barack Obama once again threatens Iran. Obama also claimed that Iran has become isolated following diplomatic pressure applied by Washington and its Western allies.
It means war. That's the only thing it does mean. When you say you're not taking anything off the table, you're talking about the possibility of a military attack on Iran. I think that would be an utter catastrophe for the region. I think it would be a worldwide catastrophe.
This is all about control. This is all about control. This is all about saying, hey, look, we are indispensable. We are basically, we still have the power, and we still have the power to control, and don't forget it.
Obama also reaffirmed Washington's commitment to Israel's security.
Our ironclad commitment, and I mean ironclad, to Israel's security has meant the closest military cooperation between our two countries in history.
Earlier, America's European allies imposed an embargo on Iran's oil exports, they said, to pressure Iran to stop its nuclear energy program. Tehran has already emphasized the futility of the EU embargo on its oil sector. And the Western line on the issue has worn thin with the international community. The 120 non-aligned movement countries, as well as 17 observer countries, have been voicing their views more and more openly, that the Western provocations are more likely to do with putting a stop to Iran's resurgent economic and political clout on the world stage. Countries including two UN Security Council permanent veto-holding powers, Russia and China, have already slammed Washington and EU's latest moves as improper and unhelpful. However, Iran's near-paranoid arch-enemy and the Middle East's nuclear-armed pariah, Israel, has welcomed the anti-Iran sanctions.
I congratulate her for the decisions in Europe regarding to the sanctions on Iran.
I want to express our appreciation for the last resolutions taken by United Europe.
The EU has apparently towed the US line to save Washington's blushes after the Obama administration's efforts to get the Eastern Hemisphere's economic giants to boycott Iran's oil were ignored. Tehran has shouldered numerous sanctions by the US and its allies since the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution. But as admitted by the same states, it's emerged as the most powerful and technologically advanced nation in the strategic Middle East region and on the world stage.
Let me introduce our guest. We have staff writer from Veterans Today, Joshua Blakely, who joins us from Calgary, Canada. Joshua Blakely, thanks so much for joining us. Let's go directly to the first question, which starts with what the U.S. President in the State of the Union address said, and it's really a disinformation. And that is that Iran is on the path of acquiring a nuclear weapon.
Yeah, it was a quite myopic speech coming from the President of the United States. I mean, I found particularly telling that he made the statement that the world was once divided and that thanks to him, the world is now united on the question of Iran. I'm having some feedback. I apologize, Dan. But the reality is, of course, that the non-aligned movement, which has consisted of 120 nations, issued a statement just 8 days ago in which they endorsed Iranian sovereignty and expressed expressed their hostility towards the U.S. encroaching on Iranian sovereignty. And therefore, that was one utterance from the President of the United States that was evidently false. Obviously, the insinuation that Iran is trying to acquire nuclear weapons is buttressed by no evidence. And of course, the IAEA, any statements they have made in which they have indirectly implied this has been inferred from evidence, so-called, provided to them by its member states, like the United States and Israel and Britain. And therefore, their statements aren't reliable at all. Iran clearly is trying to develop a civilian nuclear program, like France has and like many countries in the world have, which is completely justifiable and indeed legal. And so the President of the United States, I think, reflected not necessarily his own perspective, but those of his backers. You know, the United States political system is one where money speaks. In a capitalist system, those who own capital have political clout. And the statements that Barack Obama made vis-a-vis the Middle East, and really in general, to do with domestic economics also, I believe were the product of his backers. And we know who is supporting the Democrat Party financially and what their agenda is in terms of Middle East policy. And that, in my humble opinion, is to promote the interests of the State of Israel, often, in fact, jeopardizing what was traditionally U.S. Middle East policy, which was to try and do bilateral negotiations with ensconced Middle East regimes. And therefore, this speech has to go down as an embarrassment. And in fact, if you look, if you go to about an hour into the into Barack Obama's State of the Union address, in about an hour into it, you'll see that when he mentions Iran and when he mentions his ironclad support for the State of Israel, that actually only about half of the congresspersons clapped, which might indicate that there's some discontent with this tendentious policy of the United States towards the State of Israel.
Right, and that's a good point to bring up. Well, let me bring in our next guest, Mark Glenn, from the Crescent and Cross Solidarity Movement. He joins us from Idaho. Mark Glenn, let's bring you in on this, and we're talking about the State of the Union address by President Obama. And of course, I'm sure you're well aware he resorted to threats against Iran by saying that all options are on the table. What is this all options are on the table, first of all? Shouldn't there be only one option, diplomacy? And of course, what do you think is the signal that he was trying to send by this threat?
Well, as my colleague pointed out, this is an election year, and Obama, like all presidents, wants to be reelected. And so he knows that he is beholden to the people who put him in power in the first place, and he basically has to do what they say if he stands any chance of being reelected as president. So in that sense, Obama's speech really is a speech that was written by Israel's foreign policy planners, and that means the United States fighting Israel's wars for her wherever they may be, if it's Iraq, if it's Afghanistan, if it is Libya, if it is Iran. We have to remember that the plan that is behind all of this is to secure an Israeli empire, okay, which would encompass the land, all of the land between the Nile and the Euphrates River. So Obama basically has to do what he is told if he wants to not only to be reelected, but if he wants to remain alive. I mean, we have to remember that the people who are responsible for all of this mayhem in the Middle East, they have absolutely no compunction about killing anyone. If they would kill a million innocent men, women, and children in Iraq, why would they be opposed to killing an American president who happened to get in the way of their imperial designs? And this is something that was recently discussed in a newspaper column that was written by a Jewish publisher in the United States, where he talked about the propriety of Israel's intelligence and assassination service, Mossad, going after and killing the United States president because the president would not do what Israel demanded vis-a-vis war with Iran. And so, you know, I think that throughout the world, I think that really it's only within the American system itself that this is something that is not widely known. I think the rest of the world basically knows that the United States has been reduced to basically attack dog status for the Jewish state. It is not a superpower anymore in the sense that the United States can make decisions that are in her own best. We are a dog on a leash, and Obama's speech last night is just one more proof in that direction.
Right, and quickly, you mentioned about this article in which Mossad was mentioned, and I believe I understood you correctly in terms of a threat to the U.S. presidents if what Israel wants is not achieved. I mean, is that really something that is the case, that the United States, even though it supports Israel by the tune of, estimates vary, $2 billion to $4 billion a year, has to really somewhat be obedient to Israel?
Absolutely. The United States, I mean, let's face it, okay, all we have heard from the Israeli press and from the Jewish mainstream media in America since the election of Obama is how much he is not working in Israel's interest. Well, since that time, okay, there has still flowed billions, tens of billions of dollars into Israel anytime Obama wanted. He could grab Israel by the throat and throttle her and bring her back into line by saying, we're not going to give you any more money, we're not going to give you any more military support or technology, and we're going to start arresting your agents and spies in this country who are siphoning off our most sensitive military technology and giving it away to countries such as China. Anytime he wanted, he could do that, but he hasn't. All he has done is made noise about the settlements issue and, of course, the fact that he is dragging his feet about attacking Iran for good reasons. Not only is it an illegal war, but an attack on Iran has implications associated with it that could lead to the absolute destruction of the United States, which Israel in the end would want anyway. She would love nothing more than to see the United States brought down so that she could rise up as a new power in the world. So, yes, the United States, sadly, is not a superpower in the sense that we are able to decide and act upon our own foreign interests. We have to do what we are told right by these people who control our media, our economy, who decide who becomes president, who decides who gets elected to our lawmaking body. So it is a sad reality, but it is a reality of fact nonetheless. And not until the American people come to grips with this fact do we stand a chance of ever rescuing our country or even, for that fact, rescuing the world.
Joshua Blakeney, let's bring you in here. You know, this all options on the table is something, again, perhaps maybe because of a re-election year for Obama, maybe it's a signal, and some say for the Israeli lobby. At the same time, the great lengths that the United States is going to get sanctions on Iran, we know that they have made and introduced the sanction, trying to get EU, which they got their approval, even though it's at the behest of Europe in terms of what they're going through regarding the Eurozone crisis, and of course, going with his co-worker Timothy Geithner all the way to China. And we saw what happened there regarding getting China on board and, of course, then with India. I mean, what is it that the U.S. president means with this all options on the table?
Well, I think this is largely empty rhetoric from the president of the United States. And I think there is a tendency among the political class to think if they repeat something as many times as possible, that it will begin to be true. And Barack Obama said in his State of the Union address that the world is now united against Iran. And that's patently false. Is Venezuela with Iran against Iran? Is China against Iran? Is the non-aligned movement of 120 nations against Iran? I don't think so. So we're seeing the decline of Anglo-America and of this kind of Euro-American imperialist world that the planet's been victim of for the past 500 years, really, since 1492. And we're living in a multipolar world now, one where Iran has some agency. And if the European Union and the United States wants to work in Israel's interests and against its own interests of doing commercial dealings with Iran, then Iran will go elsewhere and trade its resources and goods with other nations, which I think is a good thing. I think it's good that we're living in a multipolar world. One of the intellectual authors of the War on Terror was an individual named Charles Krauthammer, who in 1990 authored a paper entitled The Unipolar Moment, in which he said, oh, this moment after the Soviet Union has declined, the U.S. must jump on it because it won't be here forever. And that unipolar moment, you know, it metastasized into the invasion of Iraq and the invasion of Afghanistan. But I believe that actually they can't invade and attack Iran because they're bereft of soldiers, for a start. They're overstretched militarily, the United States. And moreover, Iran has a capability to defend itself.
So what is it
and
trying
I,
to do?
I agree with many of the points
to do, then,
the other
guests
made.
Saying it, Joshua Blakeney? I mean, some say, well, it's a distraction from the problems that he is facing at home. And I'm talking about the Occupy movement. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, to an extent, you know, it offers a scapegoat, it offers a canard or a smokescreen to distract people. But I do agree to a large extent with what my colleague said. You know, the fact of the matter is that U.S. politicians need to pander and kowtow to the Israel lobby in the United States. J.J. Goldberg did a study in the 1990s in which he deduced that 45% of Democrat Party donations came from individuals who are partisan to the state of Israel. And in 2006, Richard Cohen did a study in the Washington Post in which he indicated 60% of the Democrats' party comes from individuals whose primary allegiance is to the state of Israel. So if 60% of Barack Obama's money is coming from individuals whose first priority is Israel, is it very surprising that Barack Obama would have this so-called ironclad consensus with the state of Israel? And I think this is historically precedented. If you look in 1965, for example, when the British Empire was trying to extend self-determination and self-rule to the inhabitants of Rhodesia, the natives of Rhodesia, we saw the local crazed ethnic nationalists form a schism in the British Empire and rise up and declare independence. Likewise, the US after the Cold War had no use for Israel anymore. After 1967, Israel proved itself to be a formidable fighting force, and within the context of the Cold War, the United States could use Israel to smash up this or that Arab nation or to extend its Middle East policy. After the Cold War, what use did the US have for Israel or for South Africa? In the case of South Africa, the Afrikaners didn't have a lobby in the United States, and so the US cast them adrift in the 1980s, and the veto they provided them in the United Nations dissipated. Unfortunately, whilst that would have been logical and rational from the perspective of US hegemony, who would obviously want to win over Middle East governments to resist right. the hegemony of Russia and China,
and
who
talk
are real
about this notion of winning
competitors.
Middle East governments. Let me come in here and bring in Mark Glenn. Talk about winning Middle East governments, Mark Glenn. U.S. inconsistencies when it comes to Arab countries, or should I say silence? I mean, silence in Saudi Arabia with the human rights situation there. Bahrain, Yemen, in terms of receiving Saleh in the United States, how are they supposed to win hearts and minds of Arabs in the Middle East?
Well, they're not trying to win the hearts and minds of Arabs in the Middle East, no different than somebody sticking a gun in the face of somebody and saying, you will do what I say or I will pull the trigger. The United States is not interested in winning hearts and minds. In general, we have to remember that it is in Israel's benefit, and it is in her both short-term and long-term foreign policy objectives to keep the Arab countries surrounding her in a state of constant instability. And so having government sitting on top of these people that oppress them, deny them of their rights, and of course having all of these factions warring against each other constantly, this works in Israel's benefit because she sits there very stable, very much in control of her own situation, while these Arab countries are falling apart, and then they are, of course, susceptible to all sorts of pressures coming in from the outside. So as far as winning the hearts and minds, I think that we're going maybe a step too far, giving the United States and England and really the West in general, that is, collectively speaking, on the same leash that the United States is on vis-a-vis Israel and her policies. We're going too far, I think, in assuming...
Right. And I'd like to bring in Joshua Blakely. I'm sorry, Mark Glenn, for a closing statement. Joshua Blakely, the U.S. president has said that this is the right time for the United States to be on the right side of the Middle East. Is the U.S. on the right side of the Middle East? Quickly, 20 seconds or less.
No, it's definitely not. In the 1980s, the Israeli government fomented a new policy, which formulated a new policy of wanting to destabilize the Middle East. That goes against U.S. oil interests, against U.S. Rational interests as a global hegemon.
Okay, thank you very much. Ended there. Staff writer, Veterans Today, Joshua Blakely, and we had from the Crescent Across Solidarity Movement, Mark Glenn. Thank you for watching another edition of the Press TV News Analysis. Any comments, suggestions, newsroom@presstv.ir is our email address. From Miko Betahwe and the entire team, it's goodbye.